of Lake Effect Now. I'm Mitch Teich.
And I'm Bonnie North. Before the break, we talked with Neil deGrasse Tyson, one of the people most responsible for connecting mass audiences with the reality of science today. For a lot of people, though, science fiction is their entree into the world of science.
Hollywood's latest may not be one of those science fiction films. Interstellar may dabble in some interesting ideas and theories, and it has some interesting notions about the future of space travel. But our film contributor points out that the film might not be pushing any real scientific boundaries. Dave Lurson talked with our Dan Harmon about the film.
Christopher Nolan is a director with a commendable determination to film his movies on old-school film stock, as well as an interest in folding big ideas into big Hollywood thrillers. Occasionally, he succeeds in making a film that brushes against greatness. With Interstellar, he asks whether science can save the world from catastrophe on a mammoth scale, and if love between fathers and daughters conquers all. While often visually impressive, Interstellar suffers from some of the same problems that plague routine science fiction, with all that exposition about space and time, as well as Nolan's irrepressible urge to supersize.
Well, we just mentioned it. Did it rise to greatness?
No. I think it's a good movie, but Nolan's influences. He has stated here that Stanley Kubrick, 2001, A Space Odyssey, was an inspiration and an influence for him. He named a couple of other great science fiction classics, Metropolis from the 1920s, Blade Runner from the 1980s. But let's stick with 2001, which has the most obvious connection to this movie. In many ways, you can see the DNA of the Stanley Kubrick film in Interstellar. But let's just think about the ending of 2001. 50 years after that movie debuted, people are still talking about the ending of 2001 because it didn't reveal itself exactly. It didn't tell you what to think. It didn't tell you what's going on here. On the other hand, without doing any spoiler alerts for people who haven't seen Interstellar yet, the ending of Interstellar tells you exactly what this is and what you're looking at. And I think that that's a bad thing to do for a movie that wants to try to inspire the sense of awe and infinity. I mean, a little bit mystery, a little bit imagination, you know, needs to come to play on the part of the audience. 50 years from now, I don't think anybody's going to be talking about the ending of Interstellar if they're talking about the movie at all by that point.
And I don't think this is a spoiler either to just say it, but I think if you might get more out of the movie if you just bone up on your wormholes, black holes, and the theory of relativity. I think that just having some knowledge of those things and that does play in the movie might help you understand it a little more.
Right. If you have no idea what they're talking about, you would get lost. I assume that most people going to Interstellar have a basic, you know, 101 level on these things. We most of us have heard of wormholes. We don't need to get deeply into the science of it. But, you know, the other thing with this movie is that it talk. I mean, the rhythm is not really there. I mean, this could have been a much more exciting, much more dramatic film with less talk and more of the awesomeness that sometimes comes through in certain scenes. But do we really need, for example, all the Ken Burns stuff at the beginning, you know, the old timers remembering the catastrophic you know, windstorms. You know, it just slowed the pace of the movie. We didn't get into the movie as quickly. I think that it would have been much more effective just to show this Dust Bowl situation. You could have had a passing reference or two in the dialogue and the conversation of the major characters as to the global catastrophe that had overtaken society at that point, and gotten right into the main part of the story, which was the mission to find a wormhole to enter it in the hope of discovering a new world where humanity could regain its footing.
So is there anything groundbreaking about this movie, or is it just this is not to be dismissive, but would you just say it's kind of just the next in a line of science fiction movies?
Well, I guess I don't mean to be dismissive about it, because it is good to see films that grapple with big topics. I mean, most movies coming out of Hollywood certainly don't grapple with too much of anything anymore. And so this movie does offer you, you know, some things to think about, the audience, you know, space and time and the possibility of you know, an end of life in this world caused by some kind of climate problem. I mean, there is this anxiety in the air right now about this, you know, deniers versus advocates of the idea of catastrophic global climate change. And this movie, without really, you know, I guess getting into it too deeply, sets up the premise. I mean, the world is coming to an end. Humanity can no longer survive because of changes in the environment. So what do we do? Is it too late to reverse the change? I guess it was in terms of this movie scenario. Can we really, you know, transplant humanity elsewhere in the universe? It was always thought to be impossible because of the speed of light. You can't violate the speed of light. It would take too long to go anywhere. But then there's the wormhole thesis that's been out there in science for the past couple of decades, saying that, yes, maybe there is a shortcut to other solar systems where, you know, people could find a home. So I think all of this is really interesting stuff, and I don't want to dismiss it, but I don't think that Interstellar is going to be thought of decades to come as being, you know, among the great classic science fiction films, among them the ones that Nolan himself cites as the influence behind making the movie.
I will say that, I mean, it's a longer movie. It's 2 hours and 45 minutes. Is that right?
Yeah, it pushes 3 hours, and, okay, and that really comes down to the nub of my biggest problem with it, is that this could have been a really good, better 2-hour movie if you just cut out the chit-chat, the Ken Burns, and get right into the heart of it.
Although it didn't feel like it was that long to me. I mean, I think it did a good job of keeping interest and going back and forth. And
that level, that's true. Enough things kept happening. You know, it didn't drag awfully, but it could have moved along a little more swiftly.
Something that maybe the movie needed a wormhole from the beginning to the end.
Yes, have skipped some time, like lose an hour of time. That would have been good.
Something that I think it did pretty well was its look, the effects, the way that it made space look, or you know, the things that you expect to see in a movie that's set in outer space. Part of it, anything that was, I mean, but it didn't hit one over the head with its dazzling special effects. So I think that the restraint was shown, and it actually looked really good.
Yes, and I think that's very commendable. In that sense, Nolan equaled Kubrick in some of the scenes, at least with the depiction of space vehicles in the vastness and infinity of space. I really like the moving talking robot in this movie. Was visually interesting, and of course this was another tip of the hat to Kubrick 2001. I mean, the talking computer didn't move. You never really saw it. Here, you know, it was a clever kind of twist. You have this again visually interesting thing, this object scrambling about and communicating in a droll way with its human mentors.
Now, this movie made me think of it, not because it's identical, but the movie Melancholia, which was a very limited release and not many people have seen it, but it was...
Lars von Trier.
Yes. Yes, and just about the end of the world, different scenarios, of course. I'm wondering if that is a whole separate genre or subgenre of science fiction and or space movies.
It's become that. There was another movie, I think it was called Another World, came out around the same time as Melancholia, about some sort of opposite version of Earth that appears in the sky. There have been several other movies dealing with the last hours of the planet before something happens. Apocalyptic anxiety is being registered by a lot of filmmakers in the past few years. And, you know, the reasons for this may be, again, concern over climate change, maybe, you know, the upset to the American psyche following 9/11 and the ongoing, problems in the world. Could be many reasons for this, but I think it's a sign of some kind of public unease. I mean, we've seen many of these movies.
Something that occurred to me as well, and maybe you've already said it, but when you have a space drama, which I'm going to call this one, how does a filmmaker decide the right ratio of human drama versus the actual space part of it?
I think that human drama should win out, and you know, the science stuff. I mean, we're sitting here right now in a radio studio, and we're not discussing wavelengths and bandwidths. We're not getting into a gobbledygook techno discussion about how things are working right now. We sort of take it for granted that the technology at our hands is working. And if the technology fails as part of the plot of a film, then you might want to get into a bit of that. But I think that there's often been this tendency among science fiction writers going all the way back to the 1920s when pulp fiction era, they want to explain everything. They want to go off and show the reader or the viewer that they have this grasp of the cutting edge in technology or astronomy or whatever, you know, the subject of the story is. And I find it to be intrusive and not terribly interesting, and it detracts from the human drama, which I think needs to be part of most of the stories we tell.
And I just have to put this out there as sort of part of that, which is you have to suspend your disbelief, of course, in a lot of these movies. And the thing that I had trouble suspending my disbelief with this movie is that, you know, it was sort of a Dust Bowl illusion, and we had to leave the planet because it was no longer habitable. But I'm wondering, you know, all this effort put into space and ships and, you know, repopulating another planet, it just seems weird that they couldn't find a way to grow food. I mean, they're going to be able to go to another planet and have food there, but not on Earth. It just seemed odd that, you know, that was never really addressed.
Well, maybe they could have built vast domed agricultural areas and controlled the climate within it. I mean, and also the whole idea of NASA becoming an underground organization. I mean, I think that Nolan was trying to comment on the anti-science, anti-intellectual attitudes prevalent in some areas of American politics nowadays. So I guess maybe. But yeah, you know, since technology continues to exist in some form in this movie, and why not try to create environments where food can be produced? That was never touched upon. And I mean, it's a question of a lot of science fiction where the author of the creator of a world, an imaginary world or imaginary future or imaginary past, needs to come up with something that's internally consistent, that has, you know, logic, that can stand up to these sorts of, hey, well, what about that? And I guess you caught something here that didn't occur to me, actually, that, yeah, they should have been working on it. It wouldn't have been as interesting a movie, the great, you know, domed farm of the future, I suppose. Make a movie out of that.
Well, at least in Melancholia, they had a good reason to leave there. I mean, something was headed towards Earth and it was going to destroy it. So they didn't have 40 years to do it, but
right.
That would have been a more believable scenario as opposed to what was presented or the way it was presented in this movie anyway.
Yeah, I guess if a global, you know, climate catastrophe would occur in a matter of days or weeks, yes, exactly. Nothing much we could do about that. But since it seems to have been an ongoing process of many years, yeah, you would think the finest minds of the world could have thought of something.
All right. Yeah. What do I know, though?
Okay. Well, we're the finest minds of the world right here.
All right. Absolutely. Well, so what do you think about recommending people see this? Is it just something you should see because it's going to be part of that whole discussion of space and time? And
well, it's a movie that's worth discussing. I think it's a movie that's worth seeing. Again, I went to it, as I try to do with everything, with an open mind and left a little disappointed because I was hoping for something greater than what it was. But did I find it to be time badly spent? No. It's a movie that I could recommend, you know, to most people I know, with the caveat that, yeah, you know, it's not Stanley Kubrick. It doesn't quite reach that level, but it's got some interesting thoughts and ideas going on, you know, some visually impressive things, so enjoy it.
All right. Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
Dave Lurson is arts and entertainment editor for the Shepherd Express weekly newspaper. He's the author of its I Hate Hollywood blog, and he's our regular film contributor. He spoke with Dan Harmon about the film Interstellar.
One last break, and then essayist Linda Benjamin reflects on a key quality for surviving life's challenges. This is Like Effect from WUWM.